The meeting has the presence of a quorum, has been duly called, and notice of the meeting has been posted for time and in the manner required by law. The meeting is being recorded and will appear on the SAU 34 website at www.hdsd.org. At this moment, we all know that we had a shock of a call this morning, and I would like to take a moment of silence in honor of Dave Robbins, our Windsor School Board member who passed away this morning. Thank you. Our community has been rocked recently by such tragedy. I do have a card going around for his wife, Wendy, so when it makes its way to you. Okay, Megan, can we do the roll call, please?
From Hillsboro Deering, Chris Bober.
Yes.
Paul Plater. Heidi Welch.
Yes.
Jess Morris.
Here.
Michael Kenny.
Yes.
From Washington, Aaron Mills.
Here.
Danielle Moore. Eric Hodges.
Here.
Tyler Garvin. Laura Botello.
Here.
From Windsor, Cynthia Stoss.
Here.
Karen Turbine.
Okay, thank you. Is there any correspondence?
No
correspondence. Public comment. This is an opportunity for members of the public to share an idea or concern with the board. Comments are limited to 5 minutes per person. It is not the practice of the board to immediately respond to comments made, but I open the floor for public comment. I see no movement on the floor. You sure? No, nobody? No. Okay.
Once, twice.
Well, as a teacher, I've always got to ask like for 357 times. What time? What time? All right, new business. The data governance update with Neil Richardson. Hello, Neil.
Hello. I did last year for the HD board. It might be a little bit of a review, but most of the other boards are kind of new, so it's going to be all new for you. But I made it a little bit shorter than last year, too, so I'm trying to respect the time that this is going to take. So RSA 189-66 is a state law that was passed in 2019. It's called the Student and Teacher Information Protection and Privacy Law. It requires that every school district have a FERPA statement, the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act statement, on their website someplace. So ours is located under the technology section. It requires a data privacy security plan that includes an inventory of all software, applications, digital tools and extensions, a review and assurances that they meet and exceed the minimum requirements established by the state, policies and procedures for access to data and protection of data and protection of privacy for students and staff, including acceptable use policies, a response plan for any breach of information, and a requirement that service providers meet or exceed the standards for data protection and privacy. The data breach requirement under RSA 189-66 is redundant due to New Hampshire RSA 359-C:20, which requires every New Hampshire business to report to the State Attorney's General data breach. So they sort of, you know, rework themselves. What isn't in the law was the minimum standards for security and privacy, but I'll get to that later. So we'll notice a trend in the presentation that I chose to follow the NIST, National Institute for Science and Technology's cybersecurity framework. That's that identify, protect, detect, respond, recover circle. And each one of those makes up the entire framework. So we'll start at the top with the identify function. The unidentified function defines what processes and assets need protection. The categories that fall under the identified function are asset management. Assets are personnel, data, devices, systems, and facilities. Business and educational environment, governance, risk assessment, risk management strategies, supply chain risk management. In each of these next five slides, you'll notice I've called out within the slide where our data privacy requires us to populate that data. So under the RSA, under the identify function, that is hardware and software for us. And then what we've got across the SAU, the 255 PCs, a little over 1,100 Chromebooks, 934 Google extensions, and 274 unique softwares installed. What I didn't add is the 4,000 other category, which is essentially apps that a teacher will hit or a student will hit during the course of the day, but we're not actually using it for instruction, so it didn't get added, but there's quite a bit there. The protect function demands the development and implementation of relevant safeguards to ensure critical infrastructure services are protected. The categories that fall under the protect function are identity management, authentication and access control, awareness and training, data security, information protection, processes and procedures, maintenance, and protective technologies. The detect function specifies the need to develop and implement a good cybersecurity program that is able to detect any cybersecurity event and incident. Categories that fall under the detect function are anomalies and events, security continuous monitoring, detection, and detection processes. The respond function supports the ability to contain the impact of a potential cybersecurity incident. The categories that fall under the respond function are response planning, communications, analysis, mitigation, and improvements. The recovery function provides guidance on how to recover normal operations after a cybersecurity incident. The categories that fall under the recovery function are recovery planning, improvements, and communications. I hope that you see by approaching cybersecurity from the framework perspective, it provides a cycle of continuous improvement, yet allows us to easily manage the cybersecurity program as a whole. Before we continue, are there any questions on the five functions of the cybersecurity? Yes, sir.
What were your vendors for your antivirus and firewall?
So we are using antivirus and a firewall. However, I prefer not to answer that question during public session due to the sensitive nature, but I'm more than happy to answer that question later. Okay. Right. So, RSA 189-66 compliance. The minimum standards that the New Hampshire DOB adopted are a set of 44 controls from NIST 800-171. The controls that were chosen and their descriptions can be found in the Appendix P of the Data Governance Plan, as well as on the New Hampshire DOB website. This chart represents a comparison between our current compliance level and last year's compliance level. A lot of factors impact our compliance monitoring, and in fact, there is no way to truly achieve 100% compliance. The single largest factor that impacts our compliance is changes in how the SAU and the schools operate and what applications and services we are using. The reason for the slide backwards this past year is primarily driven by one of our critical software vendors refusing to sign the New Hampshire Student and Data Privacy Agreement. Additionally, that same software vendor does not have appropriate security controls built into their product. The SAU leadership is aware of the specific issue and is working on a resolution. But due to the nature of the vendor and the services that they provide, we cannot just stop using the software overnight. This chart is another view of the controls, which actually highlights them and shows the percentage of compliance, so it's a little bit easier to read rather than the first chart, and that's this year. And that was last year. So you'll notice that we did slide down in a couple of categories, but like I said, that was primarily driven by that one vendor that we're dealing with. All right, so the SAU, and not as a function, but as a group, you know, Hillsborough and all of us, is currently finishing a network assessment / penetration test. The results of this test will be used to address identified security weaknesses over the summer. That is one of the items that we were not compliant with on the out of the 189.66 controls. For the 2022-2023 school year, we'll be implementing email phishing awareness training, as well as beginning to plan the rollout of multi-factor authentication for all staff accounts. These two actions are not only required for continued compliance with RSA 189.66, but also become an audit item for the SAU annual financial audit. A side note that MFAs will be required to be implemented within 2 years by Primax. I just got that information last week. Other schools in the state have already successfully rolled out MFA to all staff accounts, so it's not something that we're going to be blazing the trail on. There is already districts that are successfully done it. The top cybersecurity threats currently facing K-12 schools. Ransomware has evolved from encrypting just the hard drives and cannot gain access to today's attackers are copying all of the data, then they're ransoming the computer so you no longer have access. After that, they reach out to the school, and if there's no response from the school, they're reaching out to parents and staff members saying, your school's got ransomware, we demand payment. It's really just a scare tactic. The guidance from the federal government is still not to pay the ransom and just to proceed with your normal recovery operations like you would for any other disaster. Business email compromise, or BEC, is when an employee or vendor's email account is taken over and the attackers use that account to request W-2 data or bank transfers. In some cases, the attackers are impersonating staff and having direct deposit information changed. Software supply chain compromise is when an attacker compromises a vendor of the school district and ransomwares the customer data or attempts to change payment details as well. We saw that happen before. And the last one is DDoS, or distributed denial of service attack. This is essentially when an attacker floods the school's network with traffic so that our internet connection fails. This primarily happens around the time of state testing. Due to the upgrade in the internet connectivity that we made here a couple of years ago, it will take significant resources for them to flood our network. So I sort of taking that attack vector off the table. Yes?
Just to follow up on those two, if like those are minimal with the security we have in place, if a laptop was taken, it's encrypted in such a way that access can't be given to be ransomed off?
So, yes.
I know it's a hard question to answer because it changes all the time.
It does change all the time. It also would depend on which version of laptop is stolen, would depend on the type of encryption mechanism that was used to protect it.
Okay. That way, in theory, it would be wiped, so that it would be useless. It would be
correct. And we do have other monitoring processes in place to deal with that type of situation as well. And then the cyber incidents, events and incidents, this, for the 2021-2022 school year, there were 63 user-reported cybersecurity events. 15 of them were phishing-related. 7 were permission changes. They were either asking for additional permissions, or we had removed permissions, and they wanted to know if they could have them back. 3 viruses on non-school-related devices, so we detected the virus on the network, but it wasn't able to spread to any of our devices. 4 video security system issues, and that goes back, it was related to the permissions issue. We made some changes restricting who could access what and when and how. We had 15 account lockouts. That is either the password was entered 3 times wrong in a row, or their account was logged in or attempted to log in from overseas. We automatically lock the account down as well. And then let's see, 15 events were application review and approval. So we now have a process where, in order for an application to be used, there is a review process where the user creates a ticket or submits a form. Both Jen Crawford and I get notified. I check it from the data privacy security perspective, and then Jen checks it from the curriculum perspective to ensure that it's actually a resource we want to be using in the schools and not something that's a time waster. And then the final one was 4 antivirus false positives, which is when the antivirus thought it found an issue, but in fact it was not, in fact, a virus. Those I expect to happen more often, because the antivirus that we use not only functions on the, you know, allowed and known bad software, but it looks for behaviors. And how is this software functioning? Is it making system calls that a normal program would do, or is it making system calls that a ransomware or virus would do, and then it blocks it? And that was all I have. So I'm open for questions.
I was just going to say, Castleton, when those email business phishing things, it came from the dean. It looked like it was from the dean, and it screwed up a lot. And I was in trouble, because I literally, and it said, this is about your evaluation. So it is not just like it looks like phishing. It was nasty. So they started by doing training, but then they would test us and, you know, throw stuff our way. And if we reported it, then they would be like, they'd give us a prize or something. But there was like a whole, like, yeah, if you find a fish, we're throwing some stuff out there at you. So just be aware. And that was a really good way to train us, because we were like really looking, because we could get a free mug or something that we don't need. But yeah, you think it's like, oh, I would definitely notice. When it says evaluation from the dean, you're like, oh, that must be about the thing I'm waiting for.
Yeah, check that email address carefully.
Neil has threatened us that he will that he wants to do that.
And I'm really good at those things normally. Like, I
get
pay close attention.
I get tests every day. I get 3 or 4 tests a day.
I have a question on access control.
Yes, sir.
Are you planning on adding another tier of security beyond username and passwords?
So that, yes, we'll be starting the multi-factor authentication process. So the IT department already does it. It's already on all of our servers. It's on all of the accounts that is used to manage the adding or removing of user accounts. That it's already been enabled.
Well,
thank you.
Are we all set?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
If you don't mind, just take
one
and pass me down.
I sure can. Hold on. Okay. Oh, was this about that? I've got a moment. Okay.
I have a moment.
Is this thing?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so before we get to the superintendent's report, there's nothing that I can think of better that goes with the superintendent's report than cupcakes. So, in honor of Patty's very last meeting, we have a little something for you. This is your last SAU board meeting.
Yeah.
Woo!
June 30th isn't here yet.
So I would like to present to you this certificate of appreciation and this pit in lovely crayon thing.
Oh, that is
for
so
you. For your years of service to our district as both a teacher, mentor, and administrator, we are very appreciative of everything you've provided for our community. And we thank you so much for your service to our community. And the cupcakes might still be a little bit frozen.
Thank you.
But there's plenty for everybody. So, anybody want? I'll bring around what we have here.
I'm all set.
I also brought napkins because I'm nice.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm a mom.
I'm a mom.
Oh, there are like good and ready to eat.
Thank you.
Okay,
I'll take
chocolate.
Yes, I actually know
me,
right?
Of course.
Patty,
do you want
a special with all my frosting on top?
And then you can.
Actually, I guess.
Okay, thank you.
It's just reviewing the strategic plan and portrait of a graduate because we do have new board members with us. It was about 4 years ago, I should say, the last time prior to this that we had a strategic plan was 12 years ago under Dr. Baker. And the way I would describe it is I believe the schools since then have all been sort of rowing forward but in different directions. And we really all needed to get in rowing in the same direction to move forward. So it was about 4 years ago that Jim O'Rourke and I co-facilitated the Strategic Plan Committee. And that committee was made up of, we had some board members, we had parents, we had one student, we had staff, we had business partners, and I said the community members, so again, everybody proud of us. And we started working on that, and after a couple months as we were going into that, we did work with the company, and we moved forward on starting to, and it's on the very back, put together our portrait of a graduate. And again, this was a big community event that where these were the tenets that our community all feels our graduates need to have when they leave. And this is something that would be starting in preschool all the way up. Jim and I went to every single community and we met with people who wanted to meet with us. We were there and we presented. And so it's important that people know that this was a community event in putting this together. And the way it now works is last year we reported out, and again, we were hit as soon as this was voted by the SAU board. We were hit with COVID. So last year, progress, we still made progress. I think we were very surprised when we sat here a year ago to be able to say we were able to make progress despite the pandemic. And then as we sat and reviewed it again this year, we realized it still was a challenging year. You know, we began with the masks and all the debates and, you know, everything that we went through. And we felt like a lot of times we were going backwards to then be able to move forward. So I think you were, again, pleasantly surprised, I think, in some ways when we review this, the amount of progress that we have made. But one of the pieces I believe you are going to hear repeatedly, because the three women will be presenting, is that what is very clear is that there is a great plan for next year going forward. We were able to spend a real portion of this year getting everything lined up, and great things are going to be happening next year. Just as we did last year, the way this plan is split is that it's by student success, culture, and learning environment. And we, each of our SAU administrators takes one of these, and they pretty much are responsible for it all. They will run it. There are pieces that intertwine. You'll see some of that as well. But I'm going to start right away with introducing, I believe we're going first with culture, and that would be Stacey Vasquez.
Thank you.
you.
Can I hold this?
Yes.
Okay. There we go. I believe in your packet, you, before this evening, you had last year's strategic plan, so you got to see, some of you that are new to the strategic plan review process got to see that as kind of a reference point for diving into this evening. And so the culture area really talks about a positive learning environment for all staff and students where they can feel, and this is one place where I feel like this district is really cutting edge. When you talk to other districts, is that they include physically safe, psychologically safe, and emotionally safe and connected with reasonable autonomy and driven by a strong sense of purpose and meaning. But it's that physical, psychological, and emotional safety that this district really put forward and were pretty forward thinkers in regards to how they looked at the comprehensiveness of what our school culture brings and needs to have in order for kids to succeed academically. The goal within the area of culture was that we will develop and maintain a welcoming environment that supports the tenets of the portrait of a graduate, which Patty just discussed, that will then ensure students, staff, and families feeling valued, safe, and supported to foster a responsive and high-achieving culture. Within this goal area, there are five objectives. And within each objective, there are three strategies. What you're going to hear this evening is an overview of the progress within those pieces. If we were to go through every single strategy, you guys would be like, oh my goodness. So, objective number one here was to talk about, the areas, just a little overview, the areas that we really did make some nice progress on are objectives one and four. Number five is going to address PD, which is going to be a little, it goes together with GEM student success. And then areas where we're really looking forward to push strong next year are objective two and three. But I'm going to go through each one of them. I'll just give you an overview of the general idea here. So objective one in regards to how we're going to promote an empathetic culture that respects and values all individuals and focuses on continuous improvement, obviously related to the portrait of the graduate. We made some pretty great progress. We had, not just this summer, but the summer before, we just started to look at two books in the district leadership team did, Dare to Lead and The Culture Code. And then we did our own book study within that in order to define what quality, high-performing, and personally rewarding culture would be, because really, we're going to, if the district leadership team is not just SAU, the district leadership team in regards to administrators within buildings as well, are going to talk about that in our building, then we all need to start on the same page as well. So we did that, and then what they did this year was each of them brought it back to their buildings and looked at, some of them conducted book studies within their instructional leadership team to also look at these definitions, and then start to operationalize them. And as we started to do this review with the district leadership team this year, what they found is that they really started to operationalize themselves in a system of support, which means, and we'll talk about that in chapter four, but what that means is tier one interventions. So when we talk about rights and responsibilities for all students, rules and expectations, norms that we would hold ourselves to and model for others. So we could talk about quality, high performing, and personally rewarding, but then how you do that really came out in the tier one discussion about the different interventions that they used in their buildings in order to create a structure of student success. The other piece was that we were also going to research and then develop a culture and climate assessment tool. Well, we did a lot of great research and we came up with, this is last year, came up with really three really good tools we wanted to look into further. Then in the spring, the governor came out and said, the commissioner of education came out and said, everyone is going to do the 603 Bright Future Survey, which was provided by a group called Panorama. And not confused with Bananarama. I knew you'd get that, Heidi. So we said, well, if we're going to have to do this anyway, and I don't know if people remember how surveyed out everybody was because of COVID and things like that, we said, let's not create something new right now. Let's hold on to the research we did and utilize the 603 Bright Futures Survey. So we said, okay, that's going to be our culture and climate tool. In addition, we are going to take local measures within buildings too. But and then what we found this year is that that survey completely changed. So it's not really a survey that you can use comparative data in regards to where you're going or where you were and how you made progress. So we're going to go back to the drawing board and figure out what that measurement tool is going to be for us. Additionally, one good thing we did do is that we did use, the middle school started to construct a parent engagement survey. And what we did do is West Ed that we're working with, and I won't steal Jen's thunder, is they are using Panorama as a question bank. And so what we did do was we took some of the questions from the 603 Bright Future Survey that were related in the areas so we could have some continuity between the construction of the surveys. So that was really great in terms of how we could utilize some of what we had to then continue to move forward and also look at cost.
Is it Panorama one of the driving forces behind SEL?
They have a component of social emotional learning. And so then the district leadership team, one of the other components within this is that we were going to continue to look at the hiring procedures as well as the job descriptions to start to incorporate the portrait of a graduate tenants within our hiring processes as well as the job descriptions. And so what we did do more at the SAU level when interviews come through is that we did include the job description, or I'm sorry, we did include the portrait of a graduate within, started to include it within our interview process, because again, if we're going to embody those, then we're going to look for them in employees that come through our district, as well as started to revise some of the job descriptions to include the strategic plan as well as the portrait of a graduate as they came through. Some of the challenges that we had, I discussed one already, that there was that inconsistency with the 603 Bright Future Survey put out by the Commissioner of Education, and then also balancing the use of building and district level time with a focus on COVID protocols and procedures. So that piece is really hard when we look at the pace in which maybe some of our timelines were set, but then how we met them. Our plans moving forward, it's really exciting. We're going to look at reconstructing district data teams to utilize, not only to construct data so you know what you're measuring, but then to look at how you're measuring it and what your outcome was, and then how to move forward from that. And then also we'll continue to review those hiring protocols as well as job descriptions. Objective two, this talked about generally engaging all stakeholders, and really where this looked at was we have three strategies within this, but really it talked about being able to define, again, we have to define things before we go and do them, right? Because we want to know if we're doing them or not. and the more people can define them together, collectively you know what you're doing and what the intended outcome is. So one of the components was to define meaningful and effective community engagement and develop a prioritized set of practices and programs. And then also to actively pursue parent participation in pre-K-12 school experiences, emphasizing meaningful involvement in order to, and then ultimately too, to create community advisory groups. So we weren't able to meet some of those components, and one of the pieces, again, with the pace being slower than anticipated with this, but we also, where we started and where we're going to, what started to build the groundwork for us was when we had this in our mind and we're like, we have to have community engagement. We have, and not just around COVID protocols, which was just as important because we were talking about safety and kids coming to school and personal values and all those pieces, but about how we do school together, and how that's a parent partnership. And so one of the big things that we really look forward to this year was the campus-wide Fun Fest and Barbecue. And as you recall, there was the campus-wide open house scheduled for the fall, but we had to reschedule it. And then we came through with the Fun Fest with the ultimate goal of just of connecting and being with each other, because we hadn't had an opportunity in so long to be face-to-face, to be talking, to ask how people were, because once we got back to school, it was really for everybody in their different ways, and parents felt it too, bringing their kids to school, getting back into the routine. So it was great to have people engaged, and that was really what the goal for teachers and paraprofessionals and everybody who attended from the school was, to just get out there and engage with one another, but also get out there and engage with families. We increased, through that time, we also took the opportunity to increase communication with families. The superintendent set out a Friday communication to families that hasn't been done in the past, and continues to do it with COVID being part of that, but really also taking the opportunity to share what else is going on in the district. We have discussed ways to start to have increased engagement. However, it has to be across the district, and so we can look at practices. And also, we have continued to expand community connections, particularly in the area of mental health in regards to Riverbend and for Washington, West Central Behavioral Health, which has been a community-based mental health organization that the elementary schools really wanted to make connections with, in order for PD consultation, as well as to expedite any referrals that need to be made. And so really where we look at this is that we also have a SAU community leadership team as part of the multi-tiered system of support for behavior construction. And we have school board members be on this team for the last 2 years as well, and that will continue. So within Objective 2, we hadn't made as much progress in regards to defining that meaningful piece and engagement, or pulling, actively pursuing the parent participation in regards to meaningful involvement all the way through pre-K through 12. And therefore, that's really where we need to take a couple steps back, look at what we had, and now to move forward in the upcoming years. And the way we plan to do that is to revise the timelines within the strategies of this objective, to develop practices and methods to share information regularly, to focus on continued development of communication plan, which we did a year ago, start to have a framework of a communication plan that aligns things so we can have better and more consistent communication with families, because the more information we can give out, the better parents will know how to ask questions and then continue to engage, and also tell what ways and methods can parents engage in pre-K all the way through 12 that are developmentally appropriate within the school. And then also we're going to look at to rename and refine the purpose of our SAU community leadership team within the MTSSB structure. All right. Objective 3, this is also an area where we have room for growth in regards to the timelines. And this one looks at promoting a culture of health and wellness for all members of the school community. And really, if you look at this, I don't know if you've heard about like Maslow before, Bloom's taxonomy. And so here's where, and what that is the hierarchy of going from the most simple to the more complex. And really what both of them say, whether you're Bloom's taxonomy in education or Maslow in regards to psychological, social, emotional needs, that really the most you have to deal with the most basic before you get to the most complex. And so that's where you'll see that really our progress was, the goal was to keep schools open, because we also know that had a wellness impact on everybody. Parents going to work, kids returning to school, and how we had to do, and teachers coming to work, people getting their livelihoods back all around. And so that was really, if we take a look at the objective, this objective within, under that framework, we really know the progress that we made because we kept schools open. We've had a gradual return to routines and events within each building throughout the school year, and also added new ones. The middle school added Press Day, and some other pieces within there. I won't go ahead because there's good stuff that schools did. But I got to keep it in the category. and we did review methods of obtaining student input and the need to utilize proactive inclusivity. And so in regards to giving kids more voice and choice within school, the fifth grade started a leadership group, and they're looking to expand that to the fourth grade next year. The middle school had a school, not alliance, but they increased the student representation for each grade level in regards to getting feedback and then working with teachers and administrators and then sharing it back with their advisory groups. And then also the high school increased their student advisors, I believe, to 53 student advisors. So in addition to student government, each grade level, each advisory has their own student representative that then also represents the school's interests. So not only did we work through some of the difficulties in staying together, but we also kept these objectives anchored, even though we might not have met some timelines that we wanted to within them, to say, how do we want to move forward and remain true to the idea that a student's voice really drives their engagement and the ownership of what they do. So the more positive pieces that we can, opportunities we can create for that, the less you have to deal with difficult behaviors, because they are engaged and they're owning it, and you can have a reciprocal conversation with them and take ownership. They are more likely to take ownership when difficult things come up than us having to tell them how to take ownership all the time. Sometimes when they're younger, you do, but they fit. Here within this as well, we utilized ESSER funds. This was a huge piece in regards to Washington District being able to have funding to purchase a van in order to create access to after-school activities. And that's Washington District, not just elementary school, but also for high school and middle school students. That's ordered right now. And then also one of the pieces we did was we continued to, when we talk about the district leadership team working together, we created an agenda that made sure we had focused areas in relationship to what was going on for schools, but also giving a building level administrators time to talk about what was happening across buildings. And so that was called the connections component of our agenda. And so we also at the SAU looked at ways that we could structure things to make sure that we continue to come back around to what we're supposed to be doing and how we can share it across the buildings. And then again, we had the campus wide fun fest and barbecue, which seemed like it was a blast.
Yes.
Like I said, the challenge was keeping schools open and safe. And then on top of that, there was this increased, it's almost hypervigilance. It really was in monitoring updates and new updates and changes and shifts in mitigation measures and making sure we're communicating that out in quarantine components in a way that people had the information to continue to make decisions, to work together to keep the schools open.
I'm wondering if Jen is still seeing those reports in her yes, sleep at this point. Do you miss them, Jen? Do you miss
them? I still
them?
Do, and I just So the plans moving forward are...
Thanks.
Look at one of the areas in terms of that voice and choice is to put an interest inventory out to students and see where their interest lies in the clubs that we are offering. And then look to conduct a gap analysis and determine ways that we can add to meet the needs of students to increase engagement to the overall school experience. And then to conduct a comparative study of current structures and past practices relative to health and wellness to see what our past practices are and how we can move forward. And then additionally, I mentioned this right at the beginning of this objective, that we're going to revise the timelines to fit where we need to be, because when we're looking at safety, then we take care of our health in a different way, but it's more about how we keep the schools open. Objective.
Sorry.
Yeah. Here we go. That's okay. You're doing better than I was. I wasn't even Okay. So objective four was that we'll research and implement practices and identify resources that promote positive student behavior. Here, this is where one of the strategies was to research and develop multi-tiered systems of supports for behavior. This is where you'll hear tier one, tier two, tier three, similar to the same type of tiered intervention in regards to RTIML for academics. Where we made progress on this is that we have tier one teams at each building. We implemented the use of school-wide information system suite in regards to entering behavior data so we could analyze it to inform behavior interventions. We implemented tier one instruction utilizing advisory time and classroom lessons provided by school counselors. And then we also piloted an interventionist at Hillcats Home. And then we also opened up a position for the middle school in regards to calling Hillcat Den. And so conducted the self-audit of tier supports in regards to what we give and where our strengths are and where our needs are. We're currently attending MTSS training modules in terms of admin in regards to looking at implementation science. So also we're looking at how do we maybe take a couple steps back to move forward in regards to they didn't have these modules when we signed up for the Project Aware grant, but now they've also come through and we can kind of say, oh, this is how we did it. How does it check? How is it in check or not in check with what some of the science says in regards to implementation science and getting input and moving forward.
Excuse me.
One of the areas that the buildings did identify that we need to do is, as we start to define how we do this, sharing again with parents those procedures and pieces and how we make those parts of our student parent handbook so teachers know how we respond to, how we understand behavior, and then in turn also how we respond to And we are working with the Behavioral Health Improvement Institute at Keene State for those. Like as I said earlier, we did implement new practices to increase student voice and choice. The you now have four teacher trainers in the Hillsborough Deering District. Dick Washington still would like one, but you have small resources, so how do we want to make...
They had one.
Yeah, yeah. So that's still there for Washington. If they're wrong, but we can still get the safety care training. And that is a de-escalation strategy that goes through a multi-step process, and not everybody gets trained in all of it, but maybe the first three modules do apply to everybody in regards to recognizing triggers and how to de-escalate students and evidence-based practices and responding to behavior. And then again, Washington Elementary did establish a really great consultative relationship with West Central Behavioral Health that also provided 2 hours of training in regards to mental health and responding to students in schools recently. Some of the challenges were with Tier 1 integration right now. Our Tier 1 team in each building isn't integrated into a instructional leadership group or another group within the team. So really what we're looking at, because Tier 1 looks like crosswalks good for all students, for instance, classroom behavior, implementation across the school or the teachers, and also school-wide expectations that students know and we're able to role model and talk about and then reflect on. And the other piece with that is that we are, so what we're looking at is, we have a Tier 1 team, it's a component of Project Aware grant that we had to have, but how do we make that meaningful in terms of a structure that sustains itself and is looked at all the time with academic intervention as well as behavior intervention. One of the pieces that is going to take a bit of time is when we are looking at a paradigm shift, meaning how people think about behavior, we're really looking at it from a strength-based approach in terms of teaching students. We're also looking at behavior as a form of communication. And so when you look at behavior as a form of communication, the next thing you ask is, what is the behavior communicating to us? Even though your experience with behavior could be, it could be very annoying, it could be very inconvenient, it could be very frustrating, but what is that still, even though we're having that experience, what is, as adults, we have to ask ourselves, what is this child trying to communicate? And then in turn, how do we intervene with it? So really looking at it from a strength-based wellness model versus a punitive exclusionary model. So then it helps us build levels of intervention so we can then help intervene with versus use suspension and exclusion to the degree that we may have in the past. And what I can tell you is that we have collected data on this in regards to SWIS. And so what we're seeing is a downward trend in 2 schools, a downward trend. But this data that you look at would be, I mean, 2-3 years ago compared to what we're starting to look at now. So we're really looking at how can we utilize the data teams to start an analyzation process that we can use for academic information as well as behavioral information and use that same piece, because if we can use the same manner to analyze the data, the better we'll get at doing it and the more often we'll do it versus it being separate. The plans are to continue to implement, monitor, and adjust the system as we continue to build it and move forward, continue to utilize research and data to support student growth and make professional development decisions, offer educational opportunities for families, and utilize the data team to improve the district and build capacity. Finally, number 5. Okay. Yeah. So here we're looking at how are we going to build a PD program? Well, how is what we're working towards in regards to fostering a positive and empathetic culture going to be related to our professional development? And so what we did do, I'm going to let Jen talk a little bit about this too. This is where we overlap and work together, is that we did create a shared Google Doc with PD so all the buildings could see what other buildings are doing, because really this year's PD was more building specific based on the need for buildings to be with their buildings and also redetermine their focus and make sure they have time for that. All PD time across the buildings does continue to have wellness time for staff built in. And we also continue to use Swiss data to determine building and grade level needs to help drive some of the PD that comes in regards to behavior and identification of training needs for administrators. We also looked at, as a district leadership group, what kind of training do we need as well in order to continue to lead. Some of the challenges were balancing building needs of district, some of the components for staffing shortages in regards to being able to do some district level training where really it was hard to pull from buildings when you knew there was a skeleton component that people were working really hard to keep together so that kids could keep coming to school and get what they need.
Can you just reiterate what SWIS is?
Yep, it's school-wide.
Because there are some new folks here.
Mm-hmm. It's school-wide information system suite. So it's really a data input, and so we input certain types of behaviors into this. And we can look at it across time of day. We can look at it, the frequency. We can look at the types of behaviors. We can look at, we also have within an response to intervention model for behaviors, we look at thresholds. So if students are getting so many behavior referrals from 0 to 2, then you say, oh, okay, let's look at this child. We do it in our school counseling, you know, we have our behavior intervention in place in the classroom, and then if they're getting 3 or more, if it's up to 9, that we need a little more. Maybe the kiddo needs a more intensive or targeted intervention in regards to what's going on that are causing the behavior referrals. Then you have 9 and above, you might look at adding more supports into place. So it's a data entry system in regards to behavior that we can enter.
And when did we start implementing SWIS?
This year.
So we don't really, like, in comparison to previous years, mm-hmm. we know nationwide that this year has been a behavioral challenge that we've yet to see, that we haven't really seen in education in quite some time.
Correct.
Which is why we're seeing a flood of teachers leaving the field because of behavioral interventions that aren't. Are we seeing that some of these interventions are, in fact, working?
Using SWIS as a way to...
With the data, is it going up, and then did it come back down with some of the interventions that are being used? Is it more repetitive with individuals? And, like, I'm just curious to know, yeah. Are we okay?
I think...
No, it's not. It's a very serious question.
I think here's where we're at.
It's not funny.
We're okay in relationship to the framework of the state of affairs right now, but we're not where we want to be.
No,
we're
and that's
really good. Meaning that.
Can you wait just a second, Chris?
Meaning that we want to be in a different place, but the increase in behaviors, really what we have asked is, what we see them is at 5th grade and then 8th grade the most, which is interesting, right? And so we go and ask, are other districts seeing these types of behaviors? And you are. Mm-hmm. If you look at it, 6th grade left, they didn't get. 6th grade year or a 7th grade year, now they're the oldest in the school. The 5th graders left in 3rd grade. That later end of school is difficult. However, the other part is that one of the pieces that did come up, and I'm going to digress for a second, just in terms of talking about behavior, is the areas that we did see on the Panorama 603, right, Future Survey, that data in terms of family engagement, parent engagement, and SEL need were lower, but also in line with what the national trends are. So we're not where we want to be, but we're not far off base in regards.
So I assume then that will inform some beginning PD as we go into next year of how to really harness what we know from this year to better prepare. I mean, we don't have to worry about the fourth grade transition kids never having been, you know, to middle school before, and all of those weird transition points that our students went through. But at least, and it's definitely a concern for the community. We see it on social media all the time, the concerns of community members and behaviors at the schools. And so I'm just curious to see that we're going to use that data moving forward to inform our professional development to better prepare our staff and teachers.
Yeah, and actually what the schools are really looking at, and they've done this year, but are moving full force next year, is really looking at using the advisory model in middle school and high school to look at the Leader in Me curriculum in regards to, I think it's habits of seven habits of highly
successful teens.
Mm-hmm. Within the Leader of Me curriculum. And then also the elementary school uses their tier one intervention is CARES, cooperation, assertion, responsibility, empathy, control. and they also use responsive classroom within their piece and second step as their school counseling curriculum. And Washington Elementary is looking at second step as well.
Did the entire staff do Dare to Lead and the Culture Code? Did they all read that? I'm sorry, Mike. You said there were book studies conducted at building levels. Was everybody involved in those, or was it just those who opted in?
Team leaders, the principals, I'm sorry, this is going in and out, I don't know when I'm doing something.
Thank you.
The principals did it with their instructional leaders, and then I believe Washington might have done that whole school.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, Mike.
I'm sorry.
I just have an anecdotal comment.
Yes.
As a former school bus driver,
yes,
I can attest, Jeff and the eighth grade were the worst. Getting behavior on a bus.
Mm-hmm. So maybe teaching kids, when you're up at the top, how we role model and really pull it together, because it can be really hard because you're thinking, I'm almost out of here, I can feel it, and so it kind of unravels a little bit, but you've got to also realize that you're the leader in the school at the same time. Any other questions?
Just for background information too, since there are new people here, we had a basic tracking system in place prior to SWISC.
Yeah, we had a way to enter disciplinary data.
Okay.
But it didn't.
It wasn't.
It was more difficult to pull reports and look really briefly, and so the school-wide information system suite. And it's used at the elementary and middle school right now. In the high school this year, their tier one team has really looked at what kind of database do they want to utilize. And so they haven't made a determination yet, because some of it is we're waiting to also hear the school information system, what the DOE is going to make the recommendation, because you want them to talk, right? You don't want to be able to put information in one without it talking. And high school's kind of 50-50, high schools in general in the use of SWISC. But SWISC has been around for a really long time. It was ultimately the gold standard when PBIS was being really pushed, positive behavior intervention supports. So some of the things you're seeing is that good old things still remain, and then you kind of use those as the gold standard in terms of how you then start to make decisions and utilize data moving forward. Yeah.
And so, in those two buildings, elementary school and middle school, it's 100% participation as far as training,
That's right. Yes, so you have trained facilities. Yes, you have trained people that know how to use the suite. They went through training prior. These guys have benchmarks that you have to meet in order to be able to use the software.
So consistent, stronger communication, too. So not just that it's easier to pull reports, but it's easier to put that information in to pull the report. So
right, and the fidelity of what everybody is reporting is more fidelity in what everybody is reporting at the same time. So, like, what physical aggression looks like, just Susie and Joey and Sally that are putting in, it's more likely to look the same.
So it's like one terminology, like if a behavior could be three or four different things, it's narrowed down to something consistent.
Yes,
so reported the same way.
Yes, we'd be happy. We'd be happy to have additional presentations on SWISC if that's what you want. But I just know you've got a lot to get through.
There's a lot to get through. Jess,
if you guys want, you can just let us know.
Yeah.
I just had a quick question. Yeah. Just who is entering the data? Is it administrators or is it teachers?
Teachers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Can you remind me of Washington?
No, Washington isn't because of the your size of the school.
Yeah.
So we have to figure out a way to be able to collect to that information, but we don't have a lot of paper.
Well, you can that just goes in my mind when goes into the next school, so that if there are issues,
that's a good point.
Coming through, then they're going to transfer
Yeah.
So you need to have a certain size school in order to opt into Swiss?
You don't. They'll sell it to you for the same price as we buy for it.
At this point, it hasn't been something that we've needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good thing that Washington is not having to use it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Set? Okay, thanks so much, Stacey.
Thank you, Stacey.
Sorry, I have one question. On your objective four, you talk about on your progress implementing the practices to increase student voice and choice. Can you talk about what those practices were?
Yeah, they're starting to, what I spoke about in an earlier slide about increasing student representation within advisories, so that it's not just the student government in high school and middle school that are the decision makers or necessarily having that information. So including advisors for every advisory to make decisions and then report back and work with administration and report back to their group. That's one of the pieces. And then also the elementary school, they have included, they've created a fifth grade leadership team and then also looking to expand that to fourth grade. So that's currently.
States, what about Washington Elementary?
Washington Elementary, they, Kelly shared that she gets student input in regards to how they move about for their project-based learning. Yeah. Pretty much, you guys decide how you do things as a community all the time.
Yeah, you guys are. They're doing student voice throughout.
Yeah. And also, what you guys do for your the community.
I know, me too.
So how often do the advisor leaders meet with an administration and other, like how often are they kind of represent their group?
In Washington?
Even in...
I know in one school it's two times a month. I want to say, I don't know if it's the middle school or the high school, but it's, I want to say it's high school, so at least two times a month. Mm-hmm. I can get the specifics out of the schools.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And again, any part of this that you would like more, another presentation more in depth in any of these areas, just let us know, we can make it happen.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was really good. Thank you. All right, Mary is going to do learning environments.
I have the easy part. They have the hard parts. So, Pew Investments serves as such high-profile demonstrations of how we value the education of our students as the facilities we use. That is how it looks, how we utilize them for our day-to-day classes and things of that nature. So I'm going to move right into it. My only objective will provide and maintain facilities that support a high-quality teacher-focused teaching and learning environment that allows multiple educational opportunities. So this year we actually have made a lot of progress, but most of it's coming this summer. But we have worked very hard this year with for the ESSERS funds. I mean, it was just, last year was a mess for everybody. It wasn't just us, it was statewide. Nobody really knew what was going on. But now that we've got that down, we've worked very hard and we've got a lot of projects moving forward. As Stacy said, Washington District's getting a passenger van, which has been ordered. We're working on the creation of the Washington Capital Reserve Plan as well, which is going very well. We have James working with us on that. We did finish the HDHS domestic hot water project, which was done last fall. And the pneumatic controls project in the elementary school, which also has to do with the big project coming up, the HVAC project this year. We replaced the four air condensing units on top of the middle school, which was great. That was through ESSERS. We did do a site visit to Fall Mountain to tour their CTE program. We did this to look at mainly their greenhouse and their horticulture programs and how they operate and what they do in hopes that we're going to implement something here. CTE, I'm sorry. I know, it's the tech center programs.
Career and technical education.
Yeah, there we go, career and technical education. And they have a one on campus now that does horticulture and things of that nature that's state certified. So we went and visited them to see what they did, because they have a greenhouse that's attached to a classroom, and we're looking for ideas for here. We may not be obviously going to the same level they are there, but we want to put a greenhouse here somewhere on campus to be used not just by the high school, but used by the middle school and possibly the elementary grades.
Have you been to Messinic to see their auto tech program in their CTE behind in New Ipswich?
No, we have not. Right now, you're looking at the horticulture part of it specifically. Just,
yeah. It's another area that I was very impressed. I got a chance to tour that a few years ago when it first opened. So, and I think I brought back and I talked to Jen and Jim. I was like, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. They have some really
incredibly crazy
different schools.
Okay, thank you.
And we're still looking to go to other places as well.
What?
To get more ideas.
It's a huge area. Yeah.
You know?
Would
that
go
into the community, too, like a greenhouse?
No, it would be open just to the students and be utilized.
We could sell to the community.
I was going
to
say, yeah, there would be.
I mean, Fall Mountain has an annual plant sale. They do, but the students grow the plants, they raise them, and then they put that back into the program again, which is a way to get everybody involved. So for the summer, we have the fourth grade wing here at the elementary school for the HVAC project, and we also have the courtyard project, which is pretty awesome. We are going to be adding classrooms. I think it's four will be in this. Three to four classrooms can be outside classrooms. It's going to be amazing. Just the images, and James worked very hard with the person who put this together for us, the plans. And I think this is going to be your, I mean, HVAC is great, but you can't see
it.
HVAC.
Yeah.
You know, you can see a courtyard project, and I think people are going to get excited about the use of that money for that reason. Yes, people are going to love the AC.
I was going to say, you can feel HVAC.
Yes, and I think it will help, too. It's going to help putting in the HVAC, controlling your temperatures in your buildings, things like that. So you will see savings from that. The paving projects, which you guys just approved, which is another awesome thing that's going on. And then the roof replacements that are happening because of the HVAC systems. They need replacing. There is no point in putting in an HVAC system to have to pull it apart to, or not pull it apart, but work around it to replace the roof. A couple challenges. At Washington, outside space is limited, and I know there's things going on right now within the town about giving or putting boundary lines in for the school. The other thing is contractor availability, which I think everybody is feeling. We are very fortunate that we did get our HVAC system, and that a lot of that goes to the fact that we have really good working relationships with our vendors that enabled us to do that.
Well, we're a year delayed. It was supposed to.
Yeah.
Yes.
They just couldn't pull it off.
Right. We just couldn't pull it off last year. But that wasn't just us. It's the state, too, in getting figured out what they have. They were going to approve things. The Primex availability to assess the Washington School Playground. We have been challenged in getting her out here to go through it with us. I know she's had a lot of things on the books in the month of April to do, but we are moving forward. We do have a plan. We just need to have her come out, take a look, and say, yes, you're meeting all your checks off, check off the what you're doing right. The budget planning impacted by fluctuation of material costs. Again, that's another big thing right now with the HVAC project and the courtyard. Maybe not the courtyard as much as the HVAC, but the cost of things have gone through the roof. So the money we had a year ago isn't going as far. So there were some things that had to be delayed because of that at the high school and in places like that. Again, supply chain shortages and delays all goes into that whole thing. But we're good to go, and we're moving forward. So the next thing is evaluate and reorganize facilities 5-year capital improvement timeline. ESSER's funded many of the projects listed in the plan. The high school second floor cooling, no longer scheduled for summer 2023 because of money. Obviously, the ESSER's funds didn't go as far as they should, or not should, but cost went up. And I'm very thankful for that money. It has been amazing to this district, the money you had and how far it's gone and what you had done with it. The bond for the middle school matures in August of 2022. I do want to kind of nail this home for you guys. You had a bond for $14,750,000. It's a 20-year bond for the middle school. You paid $6.9 million in interest on that bond over 20 years. $6.9 million. That's huge. So, and if you look at the bond payment and how it worked, your first bond payment, you're only paying $740,000 towards the principal. You're paying $302,000 in interest in your first bond payment, and then another $291,000 for the second bond payment of interest, for a total of $1.2 million in your first year of your bond payment. You have coming up now $735,000 that will be coming out in August of 22, of interest of $18,375 for a total bond payment of $753,375. I'm going to say to you, look at that money, use that money. You do not want to pay $7 million in interest again, because that $14 million today is more than $14 million you would be borrowing if you're going to look at a big project. If you put that money away every year and you look at how the bond schedule went, you'd have all your money to do all your projects and then some. So I understand people want that money back, and I completely understand that. But please really look at your schedule and your capital improvement plan and plan accordingly, and using that money and using that plan to flow with it. Because I think that's what's going to be able to keep this going forward. The ESSER money gave you a great starting point. Now you need to piggyback onto that and move forward. Honestly, that's my opinion. Again, I'll move on. I won't. Yes.
What other bonds do we have?
No. We don't have any bonds after that.
No more bonds?
Nope, no more bonds. And I'm a firm believer that you don't want to take a bond unless you have to. They are great in some situations. But planning for the future is your best bet, because you're going to save so much money over the long haul. So, again, that is huge. It hurts, but it also is incredible. And I don't mean take it from surplus. I mean put it on your warrant article as a warrant article to take and raise and appropriate that money, or at least a portion of it. Okay, I'm moving. Continue collaboration between the middle school and the high school for educational opportunities. One of those is that horticulture program and things of that nature. Develop and expand current facilities to support future-focused learning. When planning physical spaces, continue to consider impact on psychological safety. That's something that we've done all this year, and I think that will continue. Plan for alternative program relocation to the Hillsborough Deering School campus. That is something that they've looked at, I guess you guys have looked at for a while, and it's still on there as a plan to do.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. So, future challenges, I don't have to get into it any further. Maximizing our capital reserve funds after the bond is paid off. Increase in material costs for capital reserve projects. Again, that goes right back to putting your money away and saving for the future. We need to plan ahead and committed to ensure facility improvements. Again, I'm going back to that capital reserve fund and that plan. Facilities space for future growth. I'm doing good tonight. So again, looking at your facilities, looking how you can use it, utilize it, and grow with it. And then the high school second floor cooling. That is going to be another big amount of money to have to do. But again, if you put your money away, you should be able to do it. And I am done.
Thank you, Mary.
Any other questions? Okay, so now we've done our culture and our learning environment. And now we are moving into that all brings us to student success.
All right, so the goal, the priority area of student success. Every student deserves an exceptional education grounded in purposes larger than themselves, with regular and meaningful opportunities for self-determination, feedback about the increasing difference they are making in matters important to them, and growing relationships. The goal in the area of student success is that SAU 34 will provide high quality educational opportunities for all students that foster the acquisition of critical academic skills, embedding the tenets identified in the portrait of a graduate. And as Patty started out explaining, that these are the things that our community as a whole have determined are the essential takeaways for every student as they leave our school system. So adaptive perseverance, responsibility, a learner's mindset, global citizenship, communication, critical thinking, and collaboration. And take those things so that they can meet expectations for success in post-secondary education and the workplace. So much like the culture section, there are 5 objectives, but there are various strategies for those objectives sprinkled throughout. So the first objective is that we'll develop and implement a curriculum framework that integrates all content standards, including career and technical education, with the portrait of a graduate tenets, pre-K to 12. And this is a 5-year goal. Like when we wrote this plan, it's a 5-year plan, the understanding that the need to revamp the curriculum framework and have this is going to take the entirety of this project. So we're looking at a completion of June of 2025. So there are 2 basic strategies for objective one, or two categories of strategies. One is some work that a curriculum committee is doing, and then the other one is looking at student advisory committees to amplify student voice and choice. So this is gonna answer a little bit more of the student voice and choice question. So there is a district-wide curriculum team that is made up of grade span representation that has been working. And looking back last year, they were getting going. One of the objectives in the first year was to research how do other districts build a curriculum framework. They spent a lot of time working on that and then began to develop what is the system that we're going to use. Exciting project that they have going, which is a website that they are building so that we have a continuously updatable, active, living curriculum framework and resource list that is accessible and forward-facing to the public, but also provides teachers with the information that they need. It's a searchable database and it takes the portrait of a graduate tenets, and so you'd be able to look based on the topic, based on the standard, or based on a portrait tenet of where are all of these things happening within the curriculum pre-K to 12. So we're in year 2 of this 5-year project, really excited about the amount of work that's been done and the website design that we've been using. Neil is an active participant in that group because it has such a heavy technology bend to it, and it helps with the answering questions on the website building. So the second piece of this is that the elementary school at Hillsborough-Deering, as part of the CSI school improvement process, has developed a partnership with WestEd, which is an educational consulting firm. And in particular, developed a really solid working relationship with the team of consultants that came onto campus. And we've been able to, over the course of the last several years, do a lot of work with these consultants. Excited to say that we've been able to branch that out. They're continuing to do work at the elementary school, but we've also got the same consultant team that's come on board, and they're conducting a needs assessment with the middle school, which is the first step of the process that the elementary school used several years ago, so that they can then identify some targeted areas for improvement. As far as increasing student voice and choice, so as part of a grant activity through Title IV, Washington Elementary School students in grades 2 to 5 needed to be surveyed about the best uses of technology. And so that was one of the ways that we brought in student voice at the Washington Elementary School. The 5th Grade Leadership Institute, you've heard folks talk about that. There's also a weekly Unified Arts enrichment opportunity that 4th and 5th graders have some choice in this year, and that was new. The eighth graders at the middle school also have choice in selecting what UAs that they're taking. And so it's a, like a preview of elective selection as a high school student. And then the high school, the Stacy talked about this as well, the new student leadership model. So there's over 50 new representatives. They're also looking at ways to increase their use of what they call prep, which is their RTI time. But it allows students to schedule a couple of times. Well, some days it's twice a day, some days it's once a day that they get to schedule, but they get to schedule which of their teachers they're going to go and spend some additional time with so that they can get either extra support or enrichment opportunities. And so they increased the number of those periods throughout the week. And then we also have the middle and high school have collaborative programs that are high interest areas. They surveyed students for a couple of years. What are the kinds of things that you would be interested in cooking class? So this was at the high school. It's like, what kind of class do you want? We want you to add cooking class. So for the first time in a very long time, we had these classes that were able to run this year, and that was really exciting. So challenges in the curriculum project side of it, we had some challenges with the availability of the lower elementary school team member, just time in general. This is a huge project. It takes a lot of work. The team meets regularly to talk about the project, but there's also a lot of work that needs to be accomplished outside of meeting time. And folks are tired and have a lot of other responsibilities that they're doing. But we've got some people who are super excited about continuing on with that work once we get past that last day of school on June 17th as well. And then the other challenge at Washington, the multi-age classroom model needs to be represented within this curriculum framework, and that's a little bit different. Lots of the resources are the same, the standards are the same, but how does it look and present itself will look a little bit different. Increased student voice and choice challenges, the loss of the technology computer teacher at the elementary school is a blow to the Unified Arts program. The middle school needs to develop a process where they're collecting student input and feedback regarding their programming. And just when we're prioritizing things that need to happen. So looking at plans, the next step in the curriculum project, again, super exciting, is going to actually happen beginning the week after school gets out, but it's developing the scope and sequence for the Portrait of a Graduate Tenants pre-K to 12. We're in the process of, at 95% filled with having representation from each grade level, and they're having grade span teams. So the lower elementary school folks are going to meet with the project facilitator and the co-facilitator that's been working on the curriculum committee. And each grade span group is going to meet individually that week after school gets out and develop the scope and sequence of what it looks like. So what does critical thinking look like in pre-K? And what does it look like in fourth grade? And what does it look like in eighth grade? And all the way through, so that at the beginning of the year next year, that document will be ready for each of the grade level teams as a whole to sit down and review it and do the finalized process, so that finalizing that project in September of 2022. Continue the development of the website within the Hillsborough Dearing budget, starting in July 1. The number of hours we're going to need in order to support the work that's going to happen for teachers, not just on the curriculum committee, but across the board. So we took a third of the estimated amount of hours and wrote that into the budget so that the money is there. So each of the next 3 years, the idea is like one third of that will be there. We're building the multi-age pathways in Washington. And the elementary school here at Hillsborough Dearing is going to continue working with West Ed right through the summer, especially through September 30th. That's when their CSI grant funding runs out. We've got West Ed booked in right until the last possible day that we're allowed to use those funds for that. The increasing of student voice and choice, again, looking at ways to get more student feedback kind of across the board. The middle school doing that needs assessment is going to be able to really look for ways to develop a targeted action plan that's going to be able to address some of those things as well. The elementary school here in Hillsborough-Deary is looking at possibly expanding their little leadership institute from fifth grade down to fourth grade. Not little, that's the kids are little. And then at the high school, they're looking to really enrich both their RTI and advisory programs, looking for ways to utilize those student leaders for maximum impact, and lots of professional development happening right now and continuing to happen about the new advisory program that they're working on. And the middle school and the high school are going to continue to collaborate to share resources to develop programming that is focused on student interests. So objective two is develop and implement a equitable and balanced assessment program that supports and informs instructional practices to ensure progress towards student proficiency of the integrated curriculum framework by 2025. Again, this is a huge change of things. So we've got some progress that we've made on this, but assessment is going to come after we've got the curriculum components set and in place, and then looking at how we're using assessment. So I'm going to talk really briefly about some of the things that we're doing, but the one that we're the most excited about is that third level of partnership that we're going to have with West Ed. And they are going to come in and help us to train up a group of both administrators and teacher leaders as we implement beta teams. So this is something that has been sorely missing for a number of years. At least 10 years ago, right? We had data teams that were established, and as happens sometimes, again, when there's no strategic plan that kind of keeps that guiding structure on things, as folks come and go, different programming comes and goes. But we really identified this year that we need to ensure that the data teams become systematic and institutionalized here so that we're using those, but also talking about data and data analysis using common language pre-K to 12 so that there's a better understanding of what is happening and how those components all link together as you move from one grade span to another. So starting on June 6th, like I said, that's going to go into plans. But starting on June 6th, West Ed's going to come in and help us by doing some training in June and August about the data teams and getting those up and running. And I am also very excited about the fact that we're about 80% filled with the people that we need to have on those teams. So people are volunteering for this work, which is really exciting. And just as a reminder, some of the other assessment components that we have that will become part of this equitable and balanced assessment program that we had instituted, that K to 12 use of the iReady diagnostic for both math and reading and all of the pieces that brings with it has been very helpful, and Washington is using that as well, so we have the continuity of data. There's a ton of other, they're all, the acronyms are in there, but utilizing the data in order to create the middle school, they call it WIN time, so that's what I need, WIN time, which is very similar to RTI, response to intervention, like we love our little acronyms here. But the key here, and the high school has been working on this as well, is using multiple data points and not just assessment data when you're making decisions for students, because all of the pieces are going to come together. So challenges. We realized that the prior steps that were needed before we could get to this, what was going on in objective two, is that the curriculum framework needs to be something that people have a thorough understanding of, and so rolling it out from the curriculum committee to the full faculty is going to be part of that, and that we need these data teams in place to do this. Another big challenge that we have, regarding the use of performance assessments, which is one of the big strategies here, is that the PACE program was abandoned at the state level, unfortunately, which was a performance assessment system rather than using New Hampshire SAS. A lot of really high quality work went into that, and that work is going to be warehoused and accessible to folks, so at least it's not lost, but it's a shame. And then the high school last year, and the plans component of this objective, I talked about that they were planning on working on some school-wide competencies and learning pathways. That work was tabled because they realized they needed to prioritize the work around the advisory program first before they could get to that. Mike, did you have a question?
Where would I see your ELA curriculum now?
The ELA curriculum, so we are in the, like I said, we're in the process of building the website so that all of that information will be out there and forward facing. Right now, what we have available for folks and linked on the website are all of the current syllabi for every course that is being offered, grades 6 through 12. So you can see those documents, they list their resources and the things that they're using. The elementary school curriculum maps are not on the website yet, on the our regular website yet, but the hope is that we'll be able to have them in the, because they're in the process of building them with Westhead, that those will be able to go up there as a kind of a placeholder, if you will, until this interactive curriculum website is up and running, and then at that point that will be able to be searchable by anybody, not just staff. There will be components of it that are hidden from public view. You can't have all your tests out there, you know, and with all the things that you're doing, but there'll be a significant portion and people will be able to see the resources that are being used. So looking forward, what are the plans? Again, we've got the data team training coming with West Ed. We're gonna implement those building level and district-wide data teams.
Oops.
Is that the
it's better.
So PACE died. Unfortunate. However, the New Hampshire NHLA and New Hampshire Institute for Learning has a project that they've put together with some support from the Department of Ed, New Hampshire Education, that's what we call it now, so it's DOE NHED, and it's called New Hampshire PLACE, so it's the Performance Learning and Assessment Consortium for Educators. Super exciting project that they're doing. It's basically they're trying to take the PACE work and bring it to the next level, even though it's not going to be utilized as the state assessment system. But they're looking for teacher leaders to be involved, and it's an opportunity going forward over the next year and a half. And that's something that we really want to at least get partnered up with and have some folks that are involved with it. It's a really great teacher leadership opportunity. One of the other plans that we have going forward is people identifying where are we using project-based learning already, and where does it exist, because it is riddled throughout the work that is being done, but like to explicitly call it out so people understand that that's what that is. And then also we're going to have the increased professional development offerings that focus on performance assessment, because that's something that not everybody has. I think a better way to put it, it's something that everybody can always learn more about. So we'll look at that. So objective three is to evaluate current programming and develop additional educational opportunities outside the traditional classroom. So the strategies for this are that the principals are going to bring recommendations to the leadership team about things that they would like to see implemented, that we're going to review the opportunities and challenges that exist K-12 experience for educational opportunities outside of traditional classrooms, and figure out how we're going to get those in, weave them in, and remove barriers. So some of this are some of the things that Mary talked about. We focused really this year, the progress was on like the actual physical learning environment outside of the traditional classroom and the development of those outdoor learning spaces. The elementary school was able to host programming and by this spring have increased field trips again. So like this is a big deal. This is like new. We've got some really great things that happened toward the end of the year. And by host programming, I mean when things like the Monsher Museum comes in and does performance is not the right word.
Presentation.
Workshop for the kids here on campus. The Washington Elementary had this super cool one where they had ginormous owls come and be in the building, so that was great. But the place-based programming at Washington Elementary and the work with the Conservation Commission and School to Farm Day, and they're working on actively planning their outdoor classroom space. in utilizing all of that. The middle school, with Duncan Jenkins' support, was able to host multiple programs and guest speakers again this year, so things that have happened in the past they were able to bring back in, which was awesome, with animal adventures, Junk to Funk, and those kinds of programs. And then they also had Quest Day on April 15th, and Duncan Jenkins supported the outdoor climbing wall as part of Quest Day, but also a field trip to, it's an art museum in Manchester. Thank you very much, the Courier. And then at the high school, the ELO program, it continues to expand and provide these just incredible opportunities to students. And this year, the end of year report out on ELOs was done in a little bit of a different format, which was just absolutely phenomenal. So generally in the past, an ELO, at the end of it, the student would give a presentation to a very small group of people, usually the ELO coordinator, their mentor, and a couple of members of the administrative team, and that would be, and their counselor, and that would be who is there. This year, she changed it up, did it as a fair, so the kids had a table and a little display, and folks could come in. And the thing that I thought was one of the coolest aspects of this is that we had a number of students who worked down at the elementary school as part of their ELO. They did an internship with elementary school classes. And so one of the classes was so excited that their high school student that they've been working with was gonna do this, that they wanted to come up. So the whole second grade class came up to go to the ELO fair and got to see all the projects that different kids were doing. But it is a great time to go around this room and listen to kids just really excitedly explain about what it is that they learned, about what they're interested in, and it's things from ceramics to welding to early childhood education, to the kiddo that's took a truck that he found in the woods and is rebuilding it to make it run. He's down to like one set of brakes, something that he needed, but he's super excited about it, and it's a huge learning opportunity. And they're able to do all of those things with the ELO program. So challenges. There is a real sense of urgency regarding academic skills, K to 12, and the understanding that the worry about the phrase, the learning loss and whatever, none of those phrases are good phrases, but a real sense of urgency amongst, the educators in the district about what it is that students need as far as academic skills, and how do you fit all of this experiential learning into a system where we need to make sure that we're doing that. So that is always a challenge. The inconsistent implementation of some of these types of things, that many field trips were canceled or just simply not offered due to COVID. And then there's also some concerns with the outdoor learning spaces, that some teachers have concerns about student behavior and their willingness to take a class outside to learn. But I have got to tell you that you have got to, at some point in your life, watch Maggie and Jill Cover team teach two classrooms full of third graders and picnic tables outside. I've never seen so many happy kids in my life. They are doing their math work with their Chromebooks in the sun at these new picnic tables that they have, and they just think it is the most awesome way to spend their day. It is great. And then our other big one is transportation is always a problem. How are we going to get folks places? Transportation costs money, and so that's a constraint. But the Washington School District has grant funds approved, and they got the van that you've heard about, so that is awesome. They are also working on conversations with the town about the easement and the boundaries and figuring out how to do that. They're going to continue to host programming, finalize plans, and build their outdoor classroom. They are really excited about restarting the partnership that they had started with HD in the fifth grade to get the crossover, and we were using Croco with that, so maybe Croco, maybe something similar in the future, but really want to get that going again. They're going to really revamp and revitalize their school garden and explicitly embed and integrate project, inquiry, and place-based education throughout their curriculum. So that's part of their goals right now. Here at HD, lots of excitement about utilizing the new outdoor learning spaces in the courtyard when that's done, and already using some other opportunities. And exploring some things like Nature's Classroom or maybe Croca, and seeing if they can bring that in as well. The middle school next year, this is one of those, like, we got our lemons, we're going to make lemonade out of it. So with the calendar, we had to get creative with the calendar for next year. And we have three voting sessions, September 13th, November 8th, and March 14th, because we needed to delay the start of school as much as we did going into the fall because of the HVAC project at the elementary school. We couldn't have those be non-student days and still be able to finish the school year in a reasonable time. And so the middle schools decided that they were going to use those three dates as experiential learning days. They're going to stage out of the elementary and the high school so they don't have to go into their building when voting is taking place. And be able to just have full 3 days that are set aside for experiential learning. And they're working on that programming, and they're working with Duncan Jenkins to get some funding for things, and excited about the possibility of it. And then the high school is going to continue to expand the ELO program. They're going to revise, they're also the ROPES course. Is it something that they've been working on getting more and more folks trained on and really beginning to, that's a awesome resource that we have. Patty, do you think that there's another district in the state that has its own ROPES course?
I do believe there are some.
It's cool stuff, and we don't use it nearly as much as we wish we would, so we're going to really get that going. They're going to explore an artist-in-residence series for the 2022-23 school year, and utilizing Duncan Jenkins to reach outside for the classroom for support and learning experiences and interests. Objective four is to examine, develop, and implement career and technical education experiences for students grades 6 through 12. So what we have is current programming. Again, super excited to be able to bring in these high interest things for students. We have foods classes and family consumer science in the 6th, 7th, 8th grade. Wood technologies, transportation technologies. We know that areas of interest moving forward are horticulture and welding, and also looking at some night school options is something that we've had an interest in here in the community, and helping folks achieve the HICET test, which is the high school equivalency exam. So we did go on the site visit to Fall Mountain. Challenges that we ran into is that our site visit opportunities have been constrained by the pandemic. We had this great plan that there was a national conference we were going to, and we were going to be able to do some visits while we were out there, and yeah, no, we didn't go to Indiana, and so that didn't happen. But there's also the financial circumstances in the community. So one of the things that we're looking at here is that CTE programming can be expensive, and we know that, but there are some investments we need to look at being able to make, but figuring out how to do things and sharing resources in order to take that into consideration. So plans, research night school options in the region, and the feasibility of any local programming. Explore evening community programming. So this is something that some other school districts do, where there's classes that it's adult enrichment activities, basically, that folks, you know, so you want to have a cooking class, and it's for adults. Gets folks in, gets them to see your facilities, look at what you have, and have a better, deeper connection between the community and the schools. Develop our community outreach strategy, the scope and sequence for the portrait of graduate tenants. Again, working on it in June, going to be finalized in September. Continue the expansion of community partnerships. Continue to collaborate on the use of space, personnel, and resources between the middle and high school. We're looking at that greenhouse project, very excited about that. The middle school is looking to tie its tech ed into pathways and career exploration. And at the high school, another area of interest, early childhood, have some connections get built with the existing pre-K program. Again, right now we've had a bunch of kids go down and do some of those internships, but there are other ways that we can do that. And then looking to develop pathways to industry-accepted credentials. So this is a push that we've had from New Hampshire Ed about having students graduate high school with an industry-accepted credential, and some of them can be as complex as an automotive technician certification that you get after you've completed 2 full years of a CTE program that's certified. But there's also some that are not quite as detailed and involved, and there are things like having Adobe certification that you can then put on your resume that, you know, they're marketable skills. That's what they're looking for. It's like something that you say, I have completed this certification, and therefore this makes me more employable than I would have been without it. And looking at ways to really pull those in. And then, like Stacy said, objective five for both culture and student success is all about professional development and how does that work. Now, two of the big strategies for professional development and the student success, we're trying to make sure the PD committee make sure that we develop and implement a program aligned with the priorities and pace of the strategic plan. So, you know, it's like when we're working on assessments, we're going to make sure that we're doing PD around assessments. And also to evaluate and revise as needed the structure for PD delivery. And the third strategy is to expand peer observation and reflective practice. So feedback on the PD programming was solicited at the building level this year and not as a full district PD committee. We did expand the partnership with West Edge, which is some really high quality professional development. So we have that curriculum mapping and instructional coaching that happened at the elementary school. The middle school needs assessment, and then the data teams all the way around. The new educator mentoring and induction program has the explicit focus on reflective practice, and it is also supposed to have a strong component of peer observations. Those were limited this year, but some of them did take place. And then at the elementary school, increased ability for teachers to observe each other because we had more student teachers in the building. And those are some partnerships that we were able to develop with local higher ed. So challenges. The peer observations. This is one of the most high quality professional development opportunities that you can have is you find somebody who does good work and you go watch them do it. And that is something that we really are firm believers in. However, we have a substitute shortage right now, and the ability to provide coverage was very limited. And frankly, we prioritized coverage being provided for folks who are out due to illness because those numbers have been through the roof. Scheduling difficulties for instructional coaching. The instructional coaching was done through some really cool tech tools and not necessarily in person. So there was some videoing of classes. I mean, there's lots of permissions that you need to do for that, and not everybody. Not all parents were on board with it, which is their right, and that's fine, but it did create some little glitches. And like I said, the PD committee did not meet as a separate entity this year, and frankly, it was just people were tapped out, and it was a prioritizing what it is that where people's minutes and reserve energy could go, and the determination was made to get that feedback at the building level and have the building administrators bring it to the full district admin team instead of doing it through the committee structure. So plans. The proposed teacher's contract has an additional professional development day in it. We'd love to have that. That would be awesome. The professional development schedule for the opening week next year, we start the new educators off on Monday and Tuesday. All staff are returning. We're going to have 3 days instead of the typical day and a half that we've had some years, but 3 days, the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of PD. But then the student's first day isn't until August 31st. And this is done purposefully to allow that reflective component and some time and space and to allow folks to really be able to concentrate and focus on what the professional development is on the 24th through the 26th without being panicked about, I need to make my copies, my bulletin board's not done, the kids are coming tomorrow, I need to make their name tags, this is not gonna work. And it gives them some time and space. This is something that Patty and the union president really brainstormed together, and it's just a phenomenal idea to be able to give people that wait time in the beginning. We're excited about being able to do that. We've got the data teams coming. I've talked about that several times because I'm so excited about them. But the idea is we're going to make systemic protocols that make the use of data to inform decisions a routine and sustainable practice. And that is the important part with all these things that we're doing, that they have to be sustainable going forward. We're going to prioritize peer observations, both within the new educator program, but also by supporting it through some team leaders at the high school and other options. And then the PD committee with pre-K to 12 grade span representation is going to meet for a minimum of once a quarter next year, looking at and working with, especially with these new structures in PD that we have moving forward. So that pretty much sums up the student success. Does anybody have any questions about? I didn't go nearly as fast as I promised I was going to, so I'm sorry about that, but I'm
This is well done. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, thank you, Jen. It's so much together. Wonderful information.
It's a lot to absorb, too. But and just as a board member, being part of the plan from the beginning and committee member as well, it's nice to see where it's at now. And even though we had that pandemic, as much as we got done, and we still have so much more work to do, but I'm excited for the year ahead and the few years ahead. It's nice to have that document now in place that we haven't had for so long. So thank you all.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you, everyone. Okay. So the 2022-2023 SAU personnel appointments.
I went for 1-3% of the student public.
Okay.
So, What you have in front of you is we have four staff members, full-time staff members at the SAU that are hourly, and I am proposing a 3.5% increase to their rate. So when you look at the last two it's the last three, it gives you what the 3.5% rate would be, and then that's the hourly increase. And that is what I am proposing. I know you're
going to
do that down in action.
We're going
to
do that in action.
Yep. Okay. So, Mary, can you please go on to the financial report?
I'm going to be quick again. Right now we have $22,000 at the bottom line. That will probably change a little bit between now and the end of the year, but not substantially. You might come in around $15,000. I know there's a couple of things that probably haven't gotten in here yet. Are you looking at the same report? Okay, just you were looking. I wasn't sure if you had the same report. Maybe.
No, I do.
Okay, good. Any questions on that? Or
where are we looking at?
This is right here, Laura. It's almost the end of the packet.
Very bottom line. See, there's $22,000. That's Shane. That's how much money we have left in the budget.
Okay, thank you.
That hasn't been either encumbered or spent.
Is that a relatively low number in comparison to past years?
Yes, but remember, you're working on your I call it the default budget, but it's not the default budget. You didn't get your budget last year, so there is a difference there.
Right, I'm asking that for Paul.
Yeah, it is much lower, but you also didn't get your budget, so.
Okay.
Well, this doesn't affect the bottom line here, but I guess in a way it does. The fund balance has been a lot closer, too. We don't have as much left there. Is that the... case.
Yes, your fund balance has come down, but
it's sort of unrelated, but yeah.
So we're still good. We're in
you're
the clip.
Still good. You're all right. Still good right
it's
now.
That's all I need to get.
There's no unknown surprise, no surprises or concerns.
No, not that I'm aware
fingers,
of.
Fingers
there
crossed.
Is. It will be to us too.
Surprise.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, I didn't want to ask that question, but
that's okay. Go ahead and ask.
Thank you, Mary. Is there anything added to the financial report?
No, but I have the audit report.
And the audit report. Any other questions regarding the financial report before we move to the audit report?
Looks good.
It's getting late, friends.
Yes.
All right, audit report.
Audit report. I just got in the hard copy today for 1920. There were no findings. As soon as I get the digital copy, that will go up on the website as well.
Hold that, wait. No findings.
Yeah, on that one, yeah.
Well done, Mary.
In 2021 will be the same for the SAU. I don't believe there are any findings on that as well, but I haven't got the actual finished product yet. I got the draft, I just don't have the finish.
I was going to say, where's Paul?
I know. You know what?
Just keep moving.
Okay. Sorry. I'm sorry.
I have nothing else to say other than thank you for the past year and a half that I've been here, and you guys have been wonderful to work with, and I wish you the best.
And that being said, I would like to publicly thank Mary Henry for her incredible work and her diligent work, especially through dealing with ESSER funds and everything else through COVID the last few years. We will definitely miss you, and we wish you the best of luck at Fall Mountain. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. I had the question of a SAU board retreat, but we can talk about that another time in the fall.
Yes.
Public comment. Any other public comment? Same note as above. Second verse, same as the first.
Yeah.
No? Okay.
Don't all speak.
All right. Non-public session. All right, at this point, we are moving into a non-public session according to RSA 91A:... Thank you, Jess. Roman numeral 2A. Well, it's A, colon, 3, 2, parenthesis A, and close parentheses.
Do we need roll call?
As printed.
Roll call?
To go in?
Do we need a roll call? Motion to move to non-public?
So moved.
Second. Moved by Jess, seconded by Chris.
From Hillsborough Deering, Chris Bover.
Yes.
Heidi Welch.
Yep.
Jess Morris.
Yep.
Michael Kenny.
Yes.
From Washington, Aaron Mills.
Yes.
Danielle Moore.
Yes.
Eric Hodges.
Yes.
Laura Botello.
Yes.
From Windsor, Cynthia Stokes.
Yes.
All right.